Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, July 8th, 2021. And we're grateful as always to everyone who's joining us here today. You can get access to the tools that Michael and Jeannie teach at whyagain.org. Click on the Start Here words in the upper left-hand corner and read away. Today we are going to be listening to a replay of an interview I did earlier this year with Diedrich Wolsack. Diedrich has a website, choose-again.com. If you want more information about Diedrich, please enjoy this interview, and I'll be back for a live show again tomorrow. Well, Diedrich, thank you so much for joining us here today. It's a pleasure. I'm excited. And can you tell us a little bit about, without going into the whole long story of your life, which so many people can see in your wonderful YouTube videos, but tell us a little bit about how you got into the work you do and what drives your passion for it?
Yeah, it's a great question because there's so many ways of looking at it. But the short version would be that for a good 50 years of my life, I was absolutely driven by self-hatred, self-loathing, and there came a time when I turned around 50 when I said either there has to be a better way or I can finish this short journey, run around the sun and step out. And I had a place on the Whistler, Vancouver to Whistler Highway, where there was a very short stretch where there was no barrier. And if you went through there, then there would be a 2,000-foot drop and there'd be no risk of a wheelchair. But I decided to give it one shot. And a friend of mine had given us A Course in Miracles, which 2 years earlier I'd read one line in, which was sin is lack of darkness as, sin is lack of love as darkness is lack of light. And I thought, that's an amazing statement, and I totally agree. But then the next line had the Father and the Holy Spirit and the Son, and I said, this is not for me. So I threw it away, and 2 years later, I got to that point where either I was going to finish it or something had to happen. And I opened the course again, and this time I did not see the offending language. I just saw the message. And the message that I got from the course was varied, but consistent with all the other major universal spiritual teachers that I was very familiar with, and that is that this world is a dream, that you are the dreamer, that who you are has never been affected by who you think you are, or by what you think you've done, or by what you think has been done to you. In other words, it completely eliminated the possibility of being a victim, and I've been a very, very faithful victim for a long time, starting with 3.5 years in concentration camps, which was a good victim position to begin with, and then continued because I was just getting evidence for my self-hatred wherever I went. Absolutely stunning how effective that idea is once you recognize that everything in my life has been chosen by the false self or by the loving self.
Well, and there's a dynamic that you just alluded to, which is so powerful, which is if you hold a belief, your mind will show you the evidence to prove that belief.
Inevitable. Absolutely. And that's why I love the idea that whatever you have in your life, you have chosen. That's why our organization is called Choose Again. What that Choose Again does not really address is that you cannot choose as long as you don't transform your core beliefs. You have no free will. It's the core beliefs that do the choosing for you. And once I recognize that, I also recognize that these core beliefs were chosen by me, in my case, 78, 79 years ago. And I had always believed them, never questioned them. I had seen a few psychiatrists who basically told me I was a hopeless case and get used to it. But then I realized, no, that's not true. I really began to understand that there's no such a thing as personality. I began to appreciate that there was no such a thing as character. And that all these personality, character, who you think you are just inventions. And to own that invention joyfully and say, wow, that attests to some power, but also it attests to the possibility or the potential to transform these. And that's what I set out to do. And I said, well, the course clearly has 365 lessons, so my mouth is not too rusty. I can figure out that's a year program. So I thought I'd give it a year. And if it doesn't work, I can always find a spot to drive my car over the road. But I already knew within a week that my life was changed. It was absolutely dramatic how fast that went. And then after a month or so of doing this work by myself in wonderful solitude, somebody said, there's something different about you. Can I come and talk to you about what you're doing? And I said, absolutely. And then a few more people came, and then one person said, can I give you some money for this? And I said, yeah, wonderful. And by the end of the year, I was a therapist, which I'd never been. I don't have any official credentials. So it's been an absolutely incredible journey, which has brought experiences that I never could have imagined.
Well, and the one thing that pops in my mind to say, to clarify for people, is that when I say I'm experiencing, you know, only those things I've chosen, it's not to say that I chose to be in the camp or that I chose to have a tornado knock down my house, but my interpretation of what that means is what creates my experience of it.
Precisely. And you can, if you're ready for it, you can go a step further and say, yes, I'm also responsible for everything at the deepest level, because as Buddhism and part of Hinduism teaches, this is a dream, and I'm the dreamer. So I'm choosing this dream. So I have no problem taking on 100% responsibility. I invented the camp. I'm completely okay with that. Now, to most people, that is insane, so I tend not to go there, but I'm very comfortable with that idea. But what you said is absolutely valid, because most people are not willing to take 100% responsibility for everything, but to be responsible for the interpretation is an immensely freeing idea.
Well, and the critical part for me is I'm trying to help people come for therapy, or they come with various issues to the journey's dream, or the any kind of a spiritual self-help thing, regardless of whether or not I think I created the camp. If I use your six-step choose again process, my experience gets better.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
My life gets better.
Yeah. Yeah. And the beauty of that, of the process, is that I always take it back to what I, in the process, call the earliest memory. Now, the earliest memory may be 2 months ago. It's not genuinely the earliest memory, but that may be all you're capable of at this point. Then you do your work at that level. Eventually, and I had clients who said they had memories from in utero, and I thought, well, that's a little steep for me, but then I had an experience where that became clear too. So things have happened to us, and what we've done with them is a demonstration of who we think we are, what we've constructed, the architecture of the self. is completely self-made. So I can undo that at the speed that I'm ready to do it at. I can take years, or it can take 2 weeks, or I can take 1 day. So the time it takes to achieve a level of healing that brings joy in your life is however long you choose it to take. How long do I want to be right? And as long as I want to be right, that you should not have spoken to me like that, or that my father should not have been drinking, or that my mother should not have been depressed, then I'll stay there. And as soon as I say, I don't want to be right anymore. I don't want to be right. I've been wrong all my life. It is time to admit that I'm wrong. And how do I know I'm wrong? I'm not happy. It's that simple.
Yeah, I'm in pain.
Yeah.
If I'm in pain, I'm in error.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
So you started that out, and then you had, within a year, you were a therapist. And what's it progressed to? What is the current status of your life as a therapist, or as an intensive center leader, or whatever?
Yeah, it looking back at it, it's been really a remarkable experience in that, like by the end of the year, I had a full practice, and then somebody came to me 3 years into it and said, I have a very, very difficult adopted son who has all kinds of issues. He gets kicked out of school. He gets into fights. He's into drugs. He's just an all-around bad actor, and I don't know what to do with him, but here is some money. Can you please take him away? She wanted me to take him to Costa Rica, and I was familiar with Costa Rica at that point already. And I said, okay, I will, but not one-on-one. So I asked a colleague of mine, and we invited five other teenagers. And so the seven of us set out to spend 2 months in the jungle, seeing what healing could take place, not just for the kids, but also for ourselves. And it was an unbelievable experience of intense confrontation with the self, the small S self, mutually, both between the so-called kids and ourselves. And one thing that becomes so clear in our work really quickly is that I'm doing this work for me. I'm not a nice guy. I'm not here to help you. I'm here to help myself, and you bring me that healing. And that was so clearly demonstrated in the 2 months we spent with those kids. And then after that, that same person, a year later, said, if you wanted to open a center in Costa Rica, I've just sold the house and I'm willing to invest $50,000. And I wasn't particularly concerned because we needed a lot more than $50,000 to open a center. So I said, well, that's wonderful. But then within a week, we had 250. People came from nowhere. Suddenly, one person as much as 100 and several others 50 and a few 75. And before you know it, we had 250, and that was enough. So off I went to Costa Rica at age 63 and started the center with my daughter and a team of volunteers. Worked their asses off, transformed the place, which was a complete disaster area, basically a large garbage dump, and transformed it into an unspeakably beautiful environment, high up in the hills overlooking a lake, surrounded by rainforest, where we now do our residential work.
Yeah, I remember hearing you say something about the synchronicity there, or coming home, because at an earlier time in your life, you were up at about the same elevation with a lake.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I was born in Indonesia on the island of Java. After the Japanese had invaded Indonesia. So my parents had fled into the mountains, hoping to escape the Japanese. And that place where I was born was at 800, 2,500 feet on a lake in the tropics. So when
wow.
I discovered this place, 2,500 feet on the lake in the tropics, the same smells, the same sounds. It was like a salmon coming home.
Well, so how often are you there, and what kind of schedule do you run of having whatever you call it, intensives or retreats there?
Yeah, I used to be there permanently with very frequent trips to Canada and the States and Europe for teaching a workshop, but I basically was based there. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with lung cancer, as well as a host of other wonderful things, and that put a stop to working 7 days a week, 14 hours a day. So I took off, went to Victoria. Stacey, my partner, and I healed the cancer, but then other issues came up, as I mentioned to you. A number of messages that this body is worn out and start treating it differently. And the crazy thing is, of course, that I still have the back of my mind, if I can lick what I have right now, then I'll be back to being 50 years old. And I can... But no, you're 79 and just behave yourself accordingly is the message I keep getting. But the center is there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It has a phenomenal staff. And our staff are all ex-clients. So they're all people who've come through the program and who, through their dedication to their own healing, of course, immediately recognize that the most efficient way to heal is to help others, is to be involved in the healing of other people. And so the staff that is there, permanent staff, they come and go, but it's pretty well permanent, have thousands of hours of training with virtually any kind of psychological model you can bring to the table, from schizophrenia to bipolar to borderline to chronic depression, but mostly just to issues where they're having a little bit of trouble, like a relationship, a marriage. I don't know how to deal with my teenagers. I've lost my second job in 2 years. What can I do about that? So basic, really practical things that seem unsolvable, because people are told, well, that's who you are, that's your personality. And for them to come and recognize that's not true, I can actually be anything and anyone I wish to be. So people come for anywhere from a week to the longest has been several years, and that was a schizophrenic person who had nowhere else to go. It was either she would come and stay with us for free, or she would be locked up in an institution and we'd never see her again. And there's nothing in my mind, if I can help anyone avoid what I call the curse of pharmaceuticals, I will do that. Now, having said that, I quickly want to say that pharmaceuticals absolutely have a role to play. If I'm about to hang myself and you say, here's a pill, it will make you feel better, I will take that pill. But not as a life sentence. I will take it in order to calm down my mind, to give me some space, to give me some breathing room, and then to get to work and recognize in the long run, I do not need medication. In the short run, absolutely, they have a vital role.
So several questions are bubbling up for me. One of them is, how do people find out about that center in Costa Rica, and how do they get in touch with you? Where is most of your referral flow for that? Is that all coming through the chooseagain.com website?
It comes partially through the website, mostly to the videos that we have on YouTube. People see those. We have a number that are extremely frequently watched and have a lot of information. But I would say that 80% is word of mouth. People that have been there tell their friends, or their friend notice. And if you go there with your partner and all your friends know you're in trouble, but you come back holding hands and clearly being in love with the self and each other, then that piques interest. So it's word of mouth. It is, we've always been really bad at what I call mainstream marketing. I have no idea how to do that. And it's never really appealed to me. There are people that are good at that, but we are not. And it's funny, we had a client there a long time ago who wrote a little newsletter, and one of the items was about me, how to run the most successful healing center on the planet and not make money. So that seems to be our specialty.
Great title. Yep.
Yeah. So money, we've never been driven by money. Let's put it that way.
So the website is choose-again.com.
Yeah.
And one of the primary tools is your six-step choose-again forgiveness process. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a tool that sort of organically grew in the first year of my work. We had another process that we used that we modified to arrive at this one. And this one is really simple and straightforward, and the ego finds it almost unbearably difficult. But it starts with the first step, which is to acknowledge that you're upset, which means I'm not at peace. And for most of us, including me, that is only 23 hours and 58 minutes a day. But to acknowledge it is really difficult. We're not in the habit. We're saying, well, it's not a big deal, or she always talks like that, or of course it's going to rain today, why wouldn't it, whatever. We ignore upsets, but we ignore upsets at our peril, because an upset has an unbelievably healing purpose. So to recognize that I'm upset is the first step. The second step is probably the most radical of the process, and that's it's about me. It's not about my mom, it's not about my dad, it's not about my siblings or my teacher or the concentration camps. It's not about any of that. It's just about me, 100% unquestionably. Most people say, interesting, but, and then they come out with all the exceptions, but you cannot make an exception. This is one step that is absolute. If you're not willing to take it, that's perfectly fine. But if I'm not willing to take it, then I rejoin the ranks of victims.
You don't need to go to the other four.
No. you stay in your wonderful victim position, and it's all your fault. There you are, it's your fault. If you don't want to do that, then step two is a breakthrough. The next step is to recognize what I'm feeling at the moment. And for me, that was very difficult because I had only two feelings. That was rage and numb. Partially because I drank and did a lot of drugs in those days, but also because I didn't allow myself to feel, and that goes right back to the camps. So I designed a feeling sheet, which has some 64 feelings on it, which we use, and I used to use religiously till I learned how to feel. And it took me a little while, and to my, maybe not surprise, but I've recognized that a lot of people are not particularly aware of their feelings. Why is that important? Because the feeling is chosen by a belief. So each belief that I have chooses feelings. Now, it could be that one belief chooses different feelings, and when you go through the process, you come out of that belief. It could also be that there's several beliefs in one upset. So the first thing you do then is to say, what am I feeling? What is the strongest feeling right now? Is that a familiar feeling? And the answer is yes, because I don't make new feelings. Any feeling I have now is a replay of what I felt from the age from 0 to 8. So it's a familiar feeling. Then I say, take that feeling and allow it to walk you back to when you were a little boy or a little girl. What was happening? Somebody did or said something around you, and you at that moment chose this feeling, and you made up something about you. What do you think that was? And then almost without fail, I would say 95% of the time, people go to an early memory and immediately recognize what it was. So now I know the belief that chose that feeling is, you name it, I'm not good enough is an incredibly common one for everyone on the planet. I'm not loved. I don't belong. I have no right to be here. Whatever I do, it will never be successful. It will never be enough. Those are pretty classic core beliefs that we walk around with. Then the forgiveness is not so much a forgiveness for what I've done or what anybody else has done. It is a forgiveness for that belief. I forgive myself for believing this because it's not true. But the eye that does the forgiveness is not the ego eye. It is the third part of the mind. And the third part of the mind is the loving self. That has never been touched, never been affected, hasn't changed, is simply waiting for me to welcome it back in. That is the part that does the forgiveness. The decision maker, which is the second part of the mind, is the one that has to choose to do that. The first part of the mind is the ego, which is the set of beliefs, the construction we call Dietrich or we call Timothy. So the forgiveness goes, forgive me for believing that I'm not good enough. That is not true, says the loving self. You are good enough. It doesn't matter what you do or what you've done. You are good enough. Whether you're a dishwasher or whether you're president of the United States, you are good enough. You have nothing to prove. And when people hear that, that their worth is intrinsic, first of all, they reject it out of hand. And then I say, close your eyes for a minute and allow in, how would it feel if that was true? How would it feel if you're true, if you're the value you have is an intrinsic value, which you cannot improve, you cannot decrease it. How would that feel? And then absolutely without fail, their face lights up and say, well, that would be incredible. Great, then that's how you're going to live. And then the last step is the last forgiveness. Second forgiveness is forgive me for forgetting that who I am has never been touched, has never been affected. No matter what happened, no matter how deeply traumatic society calls my early youth, it can have had no effect on me unless I chose it. And the I that chose that effect is the I we're transforming. And that's the process.
And that whole ability to identify the belief system that I chose, that I download, and then question it and see the false nature of it is key to a whole series of works like this. And yours is this wonderful, simple process. It's so similar to a host of others. It's a delight to find yet another person who's mm-hmm. teaching it from a slightly different perspective, the same basic dynamic. I mean, this is how we function as human beings. We're creating our experience of life, and we're doing it every time we know we experience a tension or a negative emotion. We could use it as the wake-up call. It says, hey, yep. Tim, your thoughts are off the mark. Choose yep. again.
Yeah. Or, maybe not choose, Tim, your thoughts are off the mark, but your thoughts are telling you something about you that's not true.
Yeah, what the belief is false.
Yeah. You're mistaken. Yeah. And then never, ever, ever, ever make yourself wrong. So if you're not willing, if I'm not willing to do a process, I'm not willing to do a process right now. That will not affect who I am either. I just won't feel very good for a while.
Yeah.
And it has happened, believe it or not, even after 25 years of doing this, that I still have moments where I don't want to process. I want to be right. And then yeah. I hear that voice and I hear myself laughing at the same time, but there's such a block, there's such an addiction.
Well, there's a wonderful video available with you and Gabor Mate, and he says, hey, I was over at Diedrich's place and I learned this stuff, and then my wife didn't pick me up from an airport and I spent 3 days pouting. Yeah. Right? You yeah. know, it's a choice and it's okay. Right. What we often tell people is choose to be gentle with yourself as soon as you can, even yep. in those times where you're not willing to pick up a tool and resolve the issue at a fundamental level. Let yourself be aware that you're okay even when you're not feeling great.
Right, and there is a very distinct but fine line between being gentle and being indulgent. And indulgent means I'm going to sit in this, I deserve to feel this, I have a right to feel this. That is indulgent. Gentle means I'm not really somehow, for some reason, prepared to heal this right now. And that's okay. I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it 5 minutes from now, or I'll do it next week, but I'm going to get around to it right now, I'm not willing. That's okay. But don't justify it. Don't say I have a reason to feel this. That is the difference. So I never justify how I feel, but sometimes I'm not immediately jumping into a process.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if I argue for my limitations, they are mine.
Yep. If yep. I try and you to can be very convincing.
Yeah. Yep. I yep. tend to believe yep. it because it comes from a really good source, right? Me. Exactly. I think I know.
Yeah.
And that whole idea of being gentle with myself, Sylvia Boorstein, a Jewish Buddhist grandmotherly type, would put her hand over her heart space whenever she's upset and just talk to herself gently and say, Sylvia, sweetheart, you're in pain. Mm-hmm. Take a few deep breaths. Calm down. Then we'll look at what's going on. Then we'll decide what to do.
Yep.
But if I try to act from that pain state, even when I'm deciding I'm right and I don't want to do this, then I can, you know, beat myself up pretty good.
And I'll get more evidence. See, that's the how I mean, remember Einstein's question, is there's a benevolent universe? And the answer is, of course, yes, but it's benevolent in a way that people don't recognize as benevolent. And that, from my point of view, is it keeps sending me the same pain till I recognize this is not pain. This is an offering of healing. I need to change my mind about what is being offered here. I'm not suffering. Suffering is my interpretation. And once I get that, then I can say, well, who's the I interpreting? That I have to transform. Otherwise, I get the same interpretation.
Yeah, one of my favorite teachers is Dr. Michael Rice, and he says, you know, he's probably not the first one to say it, but he talks about it this way. He says, you know, the purpose of pain is to make my ears grow so I can listen to what I need to change.
Yep,
and Guy Finley will say that the lessons I need to learn in life ride into my life on the back of the events I don't want. If I reject the event, I lose the lesson.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll keep coming. That's the beauty. And they're all replays of something that happened 79 years ago. It's the same thing over and over till they say, okay, I get it. I better heal this. And then the healing is almost immediate. Often not permanent. Often the relief is temporary because the belief is powerful. We often compare it to if you're in Costa Rica and on our property, it's 90% rainforest and 10% is where the buildings are, and there's a bit of area of grass, etc., but it's mostly rainforest. And if you want to make a path in the rainforest, you need a strong arm and you need a very sharp machete, and you can make a path. Now, if you come back a week later, that path is gone. You won't find it. It's the same with this work. So the ego's neuropathways are like a 12-lane highway that every thought automatically runs on. And the new pathway that you and I are making together is that little path in the rainforest. Now, if I'm committed to my healing, I will turn that little path in the rainforest into a 12-lane highway. I will neglect the ego's neuropaths. They will now turn into the rainforest. So after a while of doing this work, you will notice, and I've noticed, and I'm sure you have too, wow, I suddenly reacted really lovingly, where before I would have been irritated or annoyed.
Yep.
And this time I just looked at it with love and had a wonderful time. That's the new highway.
And there are also times where I did a lot of work and I got pretty good at being calm, and then I get triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, if I'm honest and I look at it, I went back to camp and slept for a couple of weeks, and the forest overgrew and the ego pathway has opened up again.
Yep. Yep. So, and I'm glad you said that, because it's not this is not a fix. And people expect that we're so living in a society of fixes. Give me a pill, give me a line, give me a line of coke, give me a pill, give me a joint, give me a glass of wine, and everything is fine. That's what we're used to. We're not used to saying, this will take a while. We're going to make progress. That's inevitable. There's a wonderful line in the Course in Miracles that retrogression is temporary. So you do have setbacks. I do. But it's always temporary. Not only that, but the level of comfort, which before was at a minus 40, the comfort zone where I thought I should live, over time has been raised to a plus 5. So it never goes down to minus 40 anymore. It now goes from a 9 or a 10 down to a 5. It's like, okay, work to be done. So the fluctuation gets narrower and narrower.
Think about the idea of the muscle memory. And we tell people, you know, when you started to throw a ball, you weren't very good at it. But if you practice, eventually your body gets that muscle memory.
Exactly.
I just finished talking to an integrative psychiatrist yesterday who talks about how ridiculous it is that we teach children at 3 and 4 and 5 years old to wash their face and hands and brush their teeth and take a bath on a regular basis. And we don't teach them the mental emotional hygiene. And there are these specific tools we can use and we should be using every day.
Right.
To clean up the system, or as in your analogy, to clear more of the path in the rainforest.
Yeah.
And if we do that, we get the results. If we don't, we get the other results.
Right.
We get the auto process.
Exactly. And that's because we're so used to behavior modification. So we think if we only behave well, we're okay. But that puts an enormous strain on the inner system that where behaving well goes against who I think I am. And that becomes impossible. So for a little 3 or 4 year old that already hates himself, to take care of his body by washing his hands, washing his face, taking showers, whatever, is an effort. If we taught that same little 3.5 year old, 4 year old who they are in truth, then taking a shower, brushing your teeth and washing your face is automatic because it's a loving thing to do. But our society and our way of therapy, mainstream therapy, has reversed cause and effect. And to look at the behavior and think you can change the behavior and thereby get a different result is, from my experience, just absolutely insane. I mean, how many people buy gym memberships in the first week of January? And how many are still going 2 weeks later? You're going against your core beliefs. You can only do that for a while, and then it becomes unbearable.
So rewriting those core beliefs, dismantling the negative ones.
Right.
And one of the things I like about your Choose Again 6-Step Forgiveness process is that, contrary to what a lot of people think that the old long-term therapy was, the psychodynamic, psychoanalytic, rather than going back and digging through my childhood, what I'm doing is I'm living my life today. And when something comes up and I notice I'm upset, I use the process.
Right.
And if that process takes me back to 2 weeks ago and a core belief I downloaded back then, I go there. If it takes me to 20 years ago, I go there. I go to whatever it is that's up in my mind at the moment that's got that energetic resonance with the false belief that's driving this. And it's just so practical that it stays right at what's happening with me right now.
Right. Yeah, and the additional beauty, and I love our mutual understanding of our work, the additional beauty is that clients immediately know that the message they get from me and from everyone within the organization is, you don't need me. I'm only here to tell you there is a door, and I'm here to show you how I opened the door, and that's it. You're learning everything you need to learn. So one of the reasons for writing my book is because I recognize that, yes, 1,000 people can come to the center in a year, but another million will never go anywhere because they don't have the funds, they don't have the availability, they can't leave their family or their job. And for them, this process is absolutely doable by yourself. That's how I designed it.
Well, and I love it that way. You just reminded me of your book. I thought, what kind of an interview am I? Yeah, the book. I read the book. I have it on Kindle. I have all kinds of things highlighted. I thought, hey, when we do this, I have to ask him about this story or that story. But I got so excited just having you here face to face that I forgot all about that. But it is a wonderful book. I've read it. I've highlighted things from it. And I highly recommend it. I was going to look up real quick. What year did that get published?
I just came, there's a book that I read every day and I make notes on it, and I think it's almost 2 years ago to the day.
So it's a fairly new book, and
yeah.
I have to help you promote it here for a minute. The title of the book is Choose Again, right?
Yeah, it's Choose Again.
Six Steps to Freedom, Diedrich Wolfack.
I can show you.
There you go.
There it is.
It's harder to do when you get it on.
Is it in a mirror image or is it straight?
It's beautiful.
Okay.
Yep. And we have, you know, the idea that you just purported, that's what I love so much about this. A lot of my favorite teachers have put so much stuff out there on the internet free. Mm-hmm. And here's the steps, here's the tools, and that's what you've done with this book. It's a beautiful representation of first here's a six-step process, and then here's a chapter for each of the steps, and then here are some stories, right? Here are some actual descriptions. The case studies, the descriptions of how people have used this in their mm-hmm. lives, how you've used it in your life, and I highly recommend the book. It's delightful.
Did you have some questions? You said you had something you
wanted to do. Oh, I highlighted all kinds of stuff, and I was going to, you know, say, you know, have Diedrich tell us about this story or that story. You know, one of them is this elderly client that you saw many years ago. It's from page 111 in the book. He was on 12 medications, and it quickly became apparent we're not going to be able to access any true feelings when he was on all of those. Because it was like a dark blanket of stuff on him. That's one of the things that I'm very glad you said it the way you did. Medications may have a purpose like a cast for a broken arm, but if I leave that cast on there too long, it's not helping anymore, right? The arm's going to atrophy, and that's the kind of thing that happens so often. There's a gentleman who began the Same Here Global movement, samehereglobal.org, and he has a story like that where he had a mental emotional collapse, and they tried to look for a physical problem. There weren't any, and the first time he went to a doctor, he left with 5 medications. And then several years later, he'd been through every medication they have. I think they said over 50 medications. And it wasn't until he ran into a therapist who told him the kinds of things that you would tell him. Hey, look, there's mm-hmm. more to this than just taking pills. Why don't you take a breath? Why don't you look inside a little bit? Let me tell you, you know, that his life opened up again.
Yeah. Yeah, and the challenge is that people most of the time do feel better on medication. But what they'll never achieve or would never reach or where they'll never land is in the state of true joy. On medication, I mean, it's always described as coping. I'm managing really well. I'm managing my anger. I'm managing my fear. I don't want to manage anger or fear. I want to look at the eye that's afraid. I want to look at the eye that gets angry. I want to transform that eye. I used to be addicted to anger. I was angry all the time. I was just sharing with my partner when I was 8, when I was sent to a foster home in Holland. Within a day, I was physically fighting the entire school. They would surround me at recess, and I was this little boy of 8 years old, fighting with every single person that would come within 10 feet of me. That was my self-hatred attracting immediate evidence. Fast forward 14 years later, or 13 years later, I'm in the Army. The first day in the Army, in the barracks, I have 200 people after me. Absolutely unbelievable. I've never, in my experience with others, seen a similar overwhelming attraction of self-hatred. I mean, and people ask me, how did they even know you? I don't know how they knew me, but they knew me.
Well, it's very useful for me because we're hearing this in a slightly different format when you're saying that I'm going to see the evidence that helps prove the false belief or the negative belief that I hold about myself.
Yeah.
And just that slight twist on the same dynamic that we talk about in some of our other work, that I have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of my conscious awareness in each moment, and it's that focus of conscious awareness in each moment that creates what I experience, my experience of life. Well, you know, along comes Diedrich and he says, hey, on top of that, if I'm holding a negative belief, I am going to see the evidence that proves me right.
Yep. Over and over and over.
And sometimes in mystical ways, like you just said, how do all these people know that I'm such a hateful person?
No, it's mind-blowing. It really is. It's so interesting how it works. Now, part of my story is not only was I a borderline personality, but I also had a fair degree of autism. So in school, I was kicked out of every class within 5 minutes. And I was sent to 3 different schools, and my parents just didn't know what the hell to do with me in scholastically. And if I look back at it, I never knew why I was kicked out. It was always I blurted out something. I didn't know what it was. I'll tell you one little story. I'm not sure whether it's in the book or not, but it's priceless. Years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, I was doing a deep meditation. In that meditation, I had a loving memory, and I couldn't really place the details of the memory, but it was an experience of acceptance. And an experience of acceptance was extraordinarily rare for me for the first 50 plus years of my life. So I went back into meditation, and I was in grade 8 in a German class, and my teacher, who was a brilliant teacher, fluent German, said something, and I didn't really hear him. And then he said something again, and I didn't really hear him. And then I felt his hand on my left shoulder, and he says, "Das genügt, Elise," which is German for "that's enough, Elise." And what was happening, I was whistling Für Elise in class without knowing it, because I was autistic. Every other teacher kicked me out. He accepted it. He welcomed it. But he diffused it by love and acceptance. And that is so rare for us. It's so rare that we had that.
Yeah, there's a lovely story about, I forget the name of the woman, but she's talking about a very similar thing, and she was in class, and she's really struggling to get things right and to be a good student, et cetera, and the teacher decides to have a lesson on prepositions. And so she says, here's the box, and what's your relationship to the box? And the student is thinking, how can I be related to a box? I mean, I'm related to my mother and my... And so every question the teacher asked, the student was answering from this very literal interpretation. And the story is beautiful. If you can't, as the teacher, understand there's a disconnect and try and reach, you know, the connection, then you just throw the student out.
Yeah.
Or you ridicule him or her, or you assume that they have a negative intention. And
right. Yeah, no, that's exactly what happened. I'm the only person I think that I know has done grade 8 3 times. They failed me twice, and the third time they failed me. Finally, my mother took my side, which never happened. It was always the teachers are right. I don't want to hear about it, but this time. So she went to the school director and went over my grades, and the school director, the principal said, yes, his grades, he's passing, but we don't like him.
Honesty. From honesty. Wow. Well, so what's an aspect of either the work you're doing or projects that you're starting that I haven't even asked you about yet that we should include here before we wrap up?
What we can include is that we teach workshops in the south of France every September. So this September on, we have 3 workshops in a wonderful place. I don't know if you've heard of Rennes-le-Château. Became famous through the Da Vinci Code.
Okay.
That's where it started. Beautiful medieval town on the hill, and we're right below it at the foot of the hill. And we do 3 one-week workshops there in September, 2 in English and 1 in Dutch, because I was Dutch, and I still try to speak it, even though people laugh when I speak it. But and those are fun to go to. They're incredibly intense, and they're a great opportunity for people to see a part of the world that they may not be familiar with, and particularly with the COVID lockup. I'm really, my ego is quite eager to have a different experience from being in my office for the last 16, 17 months. So I'm looking forward to going. Don't know.
So is information about that at the choose-again.com website?
It either is on there today, or it will be on there within a day or two, because we just finished. We just finalized the dates. it took a while to get some clarity whether it's going to be done this year. But I think all the signals are on green. Travel is opening up, and so we've decided to go ahead and do it.
And, of course, the place in Costa Rica is open.
The place in Costa Rica is open, and we're already receiving clients. And that, there's something about it that there's keep in mind you're surrounded by rainforest. And if you haven't been in the rainforest, that is an experience that cannot be described. There's a life force. Everything is alive in the forest. It's never quiet. I have fairly severe tinnitus, and if you have tinnitus, then you know what it sounds like, because that's what the rainforest sounds like. It's at night. It's a constant sound. But I've had people that sit on the porch in the morning after arriving the evening before and say, this is all I need. I'm beginning to heal already. It's a primal healing environment.
And when we isolate ourselves from nature as much as we do, it creates problems we're not even aware of. So that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So there was another thought that was just in my head. Let's see if it'll come back. Come on.
Oh, you have that too, have you? Short-term memory is overrated.
So I was thinking in terms of if there's a counselor or a therapist, do you have a special kind of a program for that? Do you just invite those people to go to Costa Rica or your other workshops? Do you hold workshops out in British Columbia where you are?
Yeah, we do, and we will again. Now we're opening up again. We teach workshops in the States and in Canada, in Europe, England, pretty well anywhere people want. Somebody in LA says, I have 14 people or 15 people that would like one of you to come and teach a workshop, we'll come.
All right, so, excellent.
But again, from my point of view, and it's not financially beneficial to the
okay, I'm going to have to ask you to stop a minute. And just take a breath. We had a glitch in the connection. So you said something about it's not financially something.
Oh, what I was about to say was it's not in our financial interest, but eventually I wanted to make clear that this work is designed to be done by yourself. In the beginning, everybody needs help. Everybody needs a teacher. There's no question about it, even though we all know the teachers within, but most people don't know that. And to learn that the teachers within is what we're about. After that, we step back, you know the work. And now I take very few new clients, but if I get a new client, the first thing I say, have you read the book? If not, read the book first, because then we're halfway there. If I start with you brand new and I have to teach you, it's going to cost you 100 times what the book costs. In terms of finances. So keep your money in your pocket, do your work, come to us for fine tuning, come to us for when you're really stuck or you're in a situation suddenly where you say, I can't do this. I'm just not ready for this. Then we're ready for you. We're here. But most of the time you can handle these things. One of the things we always start with, or I always start with, is telling a client there's nothing wrong with you. And usually they get upset and they'll say, haven't you read my file? And I said, no, I don't read files, but there's nothing wrong with you.
I love that. There's another aspect of the book, and maybe we can talk a little bit more after this, but I just wanted to mention that you just triggered the memory that there's a part where you talk in the book that you sit and listen to people and sometimes they're telling these horrible, horrible stories and you're just calm.
Right.
And they say, what's wrong with you? Aren't you hearing this horrible thing that happened to me? And you say, yes, I hear it, but I'm not as interested in that as I am interested in your true self, your true loving nature. If you start telling me about that, I might be in tears in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Love still brings me to tears. There's no question. Stories don't affect me anymore. My biggest challenge and healing was in the area of anger. Anger used to scare the living shit out of me, and it doesn't affect me anymore. I now know that when, if I am angry, which happens once every 10 years, it is just old guilt that I'm projecting on you. I'm blaming you for something that I think I did. If somebody else is doing the same thing, it's a cry for love, and I look at it with love. It's not impressed.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Well, I realize that we're at the end of the hour. We've pushed what they like to have as a podcast limit, but thank you so much for agreeing to this. It's delightful to meet you face-to-face, and maybe we'll see you sometime in either France or Costa Rica or wherever.
That would be wonderful, Tim.
And
yeah.
I will look forward to continuing to – your book is one that I will have in rotation that I'll probably read every year, and I have to encourage people to go to your YouTube videos. You're very generous with those and with your time. And I thank you for being so generous with your time with us today.
And I really want to thank you for the kindred spirit and the shared commitment to our own healing. So thank you, Tim. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Blessings.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Well, that was an awesome interview that Dr. Tim did with Diederik Wolsack, and he directs you to go to choose-again.com, and he has a lot of information out there. He, like Michael, is offering tools for free, and we invite you to go there and make use of those tools. That was a great interview. We thank you, Dr. Tim. And so we'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in. It's not quite the end of the hour, but we are ready to take off for the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Thursday, July the 8th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I want to thank Michelle for filling in for me yesterday. There was a lot of things going on with both Dad and my son Ryan, and we had the baby, so there was scattered energy. So I appreciate you jumping in and filling in, and we miss hearing your sweet voice, so you ought to call in more often. And welcome, Michael.
And I just tuned in, sweetie. So whose sweet voice have we been listening to?
I was just thanking Michelle for filling in for me yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And said that we didn't hear from her very often and that we liked hearing her sweet voice. So I was just thanking her for filling in. There was so much other stuff going on around here. So.
Yes, and we had a good conversation. We talked about maybe continuing it, so we'll see if she's out there and if she's going to say hello. But I know she's got some busy days getting ready to go off to Hawaii for her eternal day. So, Michelle, we wish you an awesome, happy eternal day, and may this be the beginning of the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. So welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. And the opportunity to enter into another aspect, another level of this discussion about first century Aramaic forgiveness and all the corollary tools. And, you know, an important part of doing the work is the process of what we call building brain cells. And I know I say this often because every time a new person comes on, if they don't understand the concept of building brain cells, they hear it and they go, okay, well, I understand that. But you know, when you understand that your listening doesn't happen with your ears, it makes a big difference. So when I say, I heard you say something, what I'm really saying is you have a little flap of skin in your throat that you know how to vibrate. No words have ever come out of your mouth, but a vibration does. That vibration causes air molecules to vibrate. The energy of that flap of skin moving is transferred through those air molecules to a little drum that I have in my ear that responds to the changes in pressure from the movement of the air molecules. And that causes electrical energy to move in my brain, and my listening happens in my brain. It doesn't happen in my ear. Just like seeing doesn't happen in your eye, seeing happens in your brain. We've been tricked. We have, you know, data input terminals, but the data that comes in is not what shows up as the construct of your mind. The construct of your mind is your mind's interpretation, or what's resonated out of brain cells by the changes in air pressure and the frequency of the vibration of that flap of skin in your voice box. So, and the simplest example, I like to use this one because it's one of the most profound pieces of information that hundreds of people over the last 50 years have shared with me. Actually, it's been about 40 years that I understood this one. Have shared with me has been one of the most important insights of their lives, and that is we all have brain cells for the word sin. If you've been exposed to Greek philosophy, usually called churchianity in America, then you think sin is some terrible, evil, awful thing, and it's your identity. You are one of those. And if you bought that, you bought a lie, and everything you hear about sin will cause those brain cells to fire, and you'll hear all of that conversation going on in your head. Or it will have the impact of you hearing it, even though you don't hear a thing, but it's still moving in you. So let's build some new brain cells. In the Aramaic language, the teaching to the man named Yeshua 2,000 years ago, Yeshua is commonly known as Jesus. It wasn't his name, but that's another story. So 2,000 years ago, when the man uttered the word sin, when a little flap of skin in the back of his throat vibrated in a way that the mind interpreted the word sin as having been spoken, what fired in the brain cells of the first century Aramaic thinker was an archery term. When you fire at the target and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper yells, sin, you're off the mark. That's all the word means. Got nothing to do with all that other Greek philosophy stuff and all that other, let's drive them into control and fear. So when you hear that word sin and you think archery term, what does it mean? It means off the mark. Oh, so if I do rage, I'm not a sinner. It doesn't make me that. I'm still who I am, but I have engaged in an energy that's off the mark. Therefore, I have sinned. I've put an energy into my tissue structure that doesn't belong there. And what does that mean, Michael, if I do that? Well, in the Aramaic sense, when they said the wages of sin is death, that was not some kind of theological threat, which is the brain cells that most people have for it. You know, God's going to get you for your sins. It simply means information. It's actually about physiology. If I put hate and fear and rage and guilt and grief into tissues designed to incarnate love, then the tissue is going to tend to be disorganized in a state of disarray, or what we call disease. If I do enough of that disease stuff, I'm going to die. The wages of sin is death. Now, if that's a new set of brain cells for you, at any time in the future when you're on the show and I bring that word up, you're not going to go, oh, I'm one of those, and, you know, all that Greek garbage that's been put in our minds. If I'm off the mark, I need to correct. And then, well, let's go for another set of brain cells. How do I correct? Well, I remove that energy that's off the mark. Oh, okay. Well, what do you call that, Michael? It's called forgiveness. No, 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 no. I listen to Greek philosophy. I've listened to it in churchianity, church after church. I've investigated many of them, and I know that forgiveness means that that person over there is the problem in my life, and that's why I'm in pain, and all I need to is let them off the hook, and then my life is going to get better. If you believe that, you've been deeply, deeply, deeply conned. You got a set of brain cells, and your listening will totally belie the teachings of the man named Yeshua and be non-understandable. Then somebody will say, well, yeah, but you see, you just have to take it all on faith. You have to believe me. Excuse me? No belief is required. No faith is required. It's a useful faculty, but it's not a requirement. So when you have the brain cells for the fact that sin is an Aramaic archery term that means off the mark, and forgiveness means whatever energies are off the mark, you remove, and when you remove them, you get free of your pain. You get free of your diseases. In other words, you don't die. So So hopefully that'll be a new set of brain cells, or maybe reinforcing some brain cells, or you've been with the show for a while. And that's what the whole body of this work is about, is building brain cells so that when something happens, you can recognize what truly actually happened rather than perceiving through your own limited brain cell structure. And so being with the work deeply enough, often enough, using the tools will open the space to shift the perceptual constructs of your mind so enormously that in many cases you won't even know you're living in the same world. And I mean that literally, because you won't be living in the same world. Most people do not live in the world as the Creator created it at all. Most people live in a perceptual construct. Moment to moment to moment, they live in a perceptual construct of their minds. And they have no idea that the perceptual constructs of their minds are simply reflections of the brain cells that they carry. And that those perceptual constructs tell them more about themselves than about the world they think they're looking at. And when you apply forgiveness to the energies that are off the mark, you're alleviated of your diseases, your suffering, and your pain. Now, in many circles in churchianity, you'd think that it was churchianity was a source of the suffering and the pain. Oh, you are it. No, you're not one of those. You're not one of those. You may have done the thing, but it doesn't make you that. Whatever you put I am in the front of, you being a creator, you tend to become. And who are you really? Well, my offering is, if you hold a newborn child and you tap into the energy of that newborn, you will discover at the other end of that experience is pure being, the pure presence of love. It's who we are. And when you recognize who you are, you start to function out of who you are. And you start to use language keyed to who you are, and you start to get rid of language that doesn't belong in your structure. Again, the getting rid of process is called forgiveness. So we're here to clarify that and then to recognize that the building of brain cells, you know, when you think about, you know, there's some interesting Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. In that time frame where 9 bits of data are firing, what they tell us is in the lab measuring brain cell firings that there are approximately 10,000 brain cells firing at that time. So 10,000 brain cells firing, we become conscious of 9 bits of data. It's been estimated that in that same time frame, the actuality of the world, perhaps made up of as much as 20 trillion bits of data. Now, if that's accurate, we live in a 20 trillion bit world with 10,000 brain cells firing, and we're aware of 9 bits of data, and we think we know what's going on out there. The truth is, most people never get beyond knowing what's firing in their own brain cell structure, and they don't even know that it's their own brain cell structure. They actually think it's outside of them. And so acquiring the tools, and if you're not using the tool of forgiveness, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. In the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a link that says Start Here. Click and start walking. You'll walk through everything we can offer you about forgiveness. As you walk through it and you have questions, this radio show is here 2 hours a day to answer those questions for you, to support you in taking forward these tools and applying them in your life. You can actually do the forgiveness process right there on your computer or on your phone on our website. You can download the forgiveness worksheet process. There are several variations of the process on the website. You can download those, print them, use them. You can also go to your app store and type in the words Heartland. That's one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And if you type that into your app store, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. And when you take that app and put it to work, you can do the forgiveness process, the Aramaic forgiveness process right there on your phone. Can access some of the tools from the Healing Through Relationships workshop. And you can also access a game called the Drag-On Klingon Game, where you teach kids to let go of the things that they're dragging on through their lives. You know, if you look at, let's say, some of the stuff happening politically, we'll see that, you know, there are many people out there that are dragging on a lie that's been refuted over and over and over again about the election. You know, they're dragging it on, and it's clinging on to them like it's going to destroy them if they ever let go of it. They're the Drag-Ons and Klingons. So when you teach a kid how to let go of their Drag-Ons and Klingons, then forgiveness becomes a natural way of life, and that's where we're heading. And that's a result of that. Is we get to function as the active presence of love. And so, in essence, that's where we're heading with this whole process. And we're going to turn to the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We are on page 87, if you're following through. We've been moving through it a little bit slowly recently. We've had lots of good conversations on the show. And so we're looking at choosing teachers. It's a chapter, I believe it's chapter 14, if I remember correctly, choosing teachers. And we're looking at the process of determining how to tell whether a teacher is a true teacher, one you want to be with, or a false teacher. One side of the coin is manipulation. So we're at the bottom of page 87. If you don't have a copy of the book, you can go to Amazon or eBay, and you'll find used copies there. It's out of print, but they're usually reasonably priced used copies there. Or you can go to our website and download it free in any one of several languages, so you can read along with us. Bottom of page 87. So I'm talking to this character named Richard, and I offer him the thought. This brings us to another belief promoted by the manipulator. You are bad and wrong if you ever catch me at my game. In other words, if you catch the false teacher being false, boy, are you in trouble. You will probably get fired from the political party and thrown out on your ear. That's exactly what happens if you call the false teacher on their lies. They're going to leave. They're going to depart. So that's one of the points of a manipulative type of teaching. So you're bad and wrong if you ever catch me at my game or try holding me accountable. There are people, and you know, you watch people who, well, I'm justified in leaving. Well, you know, everybody gets to do what you want to do, but, you know, truth is you can't really leave. You can pretend you leave. You can cut off external communication, but the truth is there's only one of us who can't leave it. So there are people functioning out of their pain who manipulate and engage in actions you want to avoid. These actions or cover stories can be very subtle. Some have spent their whole lives building a camouflage for their manipulation. And, you know, we're getting to see that in true living color and Dolby sound in our culture. It is important, especially since most of us were born into a manipulative world, to understand the subtleties of manipulation. Like the fish that cannot see water because it is so close, some forms of manipulative behavior are so ingrained that they're invisible. I have observed that often a person being abused thinks it's normal and appropriate to be treated that way. When an abuser is confronted, their response is usually, that's not abuse, that's proper behavior. I just need to keep them in line. We called the waitress in one of the earlier sessions with Richard. When you become kind, and earlier Richard, the character that we're having this conversation with, was sitting in a restaurant, nice clean shirt and tie, and he's sitting drinking his coffee, and the waitress comes over to grab his cup and take it away from him, and he goes into an instant hissy fit. And so he's got a reality. Somebody's taking something from him. That's the brain cells he's got for that happening. The waitress, on the other hand, has noticed that he spilled some coffee on the saucer, and he's getting ready to pick a cup up and drink coffee, so she's going to give him a fresh cup, not taking something from him at all. But everybody's got a reality all the time. Everybody's got a set of brain cells. Guess what? If your reality's based in hostility or fear, you have work to do, and it's a lie. And we just have to stop lying to ourselves. So when you become conscious of your behavior, and you categorized that this is what Richard had done. You categorized when Richard, in that circumstance, turning on in hostility at the waitress, categorized it. When he realized what the energy was and then thought about where he learned it and somebody doing it to him, the category he put it in was that of destroying. And then I go on to offer him. So prior to having the brain cells to see it for what it is, you didn't see it as proper. Remember, you were just protecting yourself. So his reality, flying into a fit of rage over having his coffee taken, is protecting himself. But when he went back and tapped in and remembered somebody doing that very behavior to him, it was destroying him. But now his mind's hooked it up differently so he can rationalize doing that behavior and not looking at the fact that he's lashing out with a destructive behavior. So again, remember, when you did that, Richard, you were just protecting yourself. That protection, quote unquote, was manipulation. The ability to identify conduct, for what it is important in breaking through the automatic cycles of behavior. So we're looking to build the brain cells to look at the truth behind what it is that we're doing. And here's my offering. Whenever there's hostility or fear that you're expressing in some way, shape, or form in your behavior, you're off base. And it's not going to produce the result that you want to produce in your life. I guarantee it. It never will. Well, I used my rage this last week, and boy, he did exactly what I wanted him to do. Yeah, but were you endeared to him? Was he endeared to you? How's the relationship going to go in the future, do you suppose? Well, it doesn't matter. I'll just get what I want. Well, if you think getting what you want is enough, that's your prerogative. But I'll tell you what, it'll never make you happy. You might get the temporary hit of dopamine. I accomplished the goal. I got what I wanted. But you're going to be on a search for something else, because the actual presence of joy will never come into a human system until that human system had being incarnate as love within it. Joy will never appear in that system. People will settle for happiness. Oh, I got a thing. Oh, look at this. I got a thing. Now that I have this thing, I'm happy. That is, I got a rush of dopamine, hot to happy powder, so I'm happy. But then 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 20 minutes, 2 days, 2 weeks later, the dopamine wore off. It's like, now I'm back to my peed off state. I'm going to have to go find something else. Oh, I have a thing. I'm happy. Oh, I have another thing. And we get lost in that game. So here we are working to move into the wake-up mode and recognize that true joy, and there's a big difference between joy and happiness, comes from the state of being, of experiencing yourself as who you are. It isn't a hit of dopamine. It is a response in your physiology to tissue being connected to active present love, which it's designed for. So hopefully there's some brain cells there that enhance your process and move you forward. And if we can support you in any way, shape, or form, of course, the purpose of this show is to do that. So if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1 through the magic of technology, Jeannie will see your hand go up and that you want to talk, and she'll introduce you by your area code. So, Ms. Jean, do we have anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is quiet, both places. So we have 40 minutes. Oh, a hand just went up. And
awesome.
I think it's Miss Cecilia. 480, you're on the air.
Can you hear me? This is Cecilia.
Hey, welcome, young lady.
I tell you, I'm just listening today to the show. I'm sort of semi-listening. My brain is scattered trying to figure out what to say because there's so much going on in me after the last conversation on the show, which is do a worksheet on my ex-husband and not a worksheet, communication responsibilities.
Right, doing your work around that, right?
Yeah, and then, of course, I'm doing the breathing exercise I talked about yesterday, which is to sending my brain, start sending it and my nervous system a regular signal of safety throughout the day. And that's by allowing my slow, deep, conscious breath throughout the day.
Right.
And then also with the affirmation, I am safe and filled with peace. So I think I was doing that like 50 times yesterday after the show.
Good work.
And then last night I was describing a little bit more of this particular show, and it was about, you know, when you're not facing your feelings and you're drinking and you're numbed out and everything, okay, you stay sober is a good idea, but the next step is, the next work is to allow myself to breathe in deeply enough to access those thought disorders that need to be removed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all connected to the breathing. And, of course, what came up for me this morning, of course, you talked about abuse just a second ago and how our society thinks it's normal. Okay, right? Did you say that?
It's pretty bizarre, isn't it?
No, it is. We're taught, as I've heard you say, insane ways of thinking. But it's a theme of my life in relationships. So not only do I have to do a lot of communication, responsibility communication letters on people that I've been promiscuous with or married with. I also, in one, my first marriage, my daughter's father, he was a drug addict. I didn't know these things when I married somebody. Drug addict, alcoholic, and drug dealer, and I didn't like that, so we never, it wasn't a good idea. Of course, I was pregnant, so we got married because of that. But anyway, what happened, I did have to separate from him. I did not want any of this stuff around my daughter and all the abuse. And one night when I was out and we were separated, I went out just down the street. There was a local little corner bar with music. And I went with a friend that's a girl, and she knew my ex-husband, and we were walking out of this little tiny nightclub, little neighborhood thing, and I wasn't drinking. I was driving my girlfriend, going to get ready to get in my car to take her home. Luckily, back in the day, cars were made 100% metal, and I'll tell you why. It was lucky, because I didn't know his van was parked across the street from this little tiny bar. I know that neither did she, my friend. But, and it wasn't the same van I've ever seen him in.
Hold on for just a second. I think we're getting a little too far into the story. We don't need to know the van or the kind of van or where the van was. Where are we going? What's the bottom line here that we can support you with?
That I never dealt with this because I thought it was normal. As I was walking towards the car, and she started screaming at me, "Get in the car, get in the car, get in the car, get in the car." And I didn't know why she was so incredibly freaked out. And I couldn't get the car door open because my nervous system kicked into, I can't even think straight to open the door. And he was coming at me with a 2-inch lead pipe to hit, to bust my head open. And I didn't see him. I just kept hearing her scream, and I vaguely got into the car, the whole top of the car.
Are you breathing? Are you breathing right now?
No. Yes. No. Okay. So
let's take a second. I'll tell you what. Would you like to do an exercise with me?
A breathing exercise.
An exercise. It'll help to loosen some of this energy for you.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. So are you standing up or sitting down?
Sitting down.
Okay. How about sitting in a fairly straight posture?
Okay.
And with your head straight up, your spine straight as you can.
Yeah.
And take your left hand and reach over just above your right ear, your opposite ear. So you're going to touch the tissue just above your ear, or touch the tissue just above your ear with your left hand.
Okay.
And breathe. And as you breathe, gently use your hand and let your head cooperate and pull your head over toward your left shoulder. Breathe. And as you're pulling your head over toward your left shoulder, allow your eyes to go up and to the right as though you're trying to look up into the corner of the room on the right side. So you're moving your head over to the left, but you're using your eyes to look up to the right and let them stretch. Your eyes stretch as far as they possibly can. And breathe as you think about this whole situation.
Okay.
And let yourself just take 3 or 4 deep breaths. We're all breathing with you. Okay, we're all doing this with you. So we're holding the space. 2 breaths. 3 breaths. Your eyes are looking way up to the right. Your head's almost down to your left shoulder, just comfortably down as far as it'll go. And a 4th breath. And then just let your head go and bring it back up to center. And keep your breath moving. And now, using your right hand, do the same action as you did, only now put your right hand just over your left ear, touching the tissue on your head just above your ear, and pull your head down toward your right shoulder as you breathe. Remember to keep the breath moving. And now as you're pulling your head down comfortably, you don't need to stress or strain, just gently and comfortably pull it down toward your shoulder as far as it easily goes. And then point your eyes as though you're now looking over to the left corner of the room. And just hold that posture. Keep your eyes looking as far to the left as they'll reach. So they're way up in the corner of your eyes, looking upward, looking to the left. And breathe. 1, 2, 3. And then just let your head go and relax. What's happening? How are you feeling?
I don't think I could have done that if I didn't figure out how to do this breathing thing that I told you about, the telling
good.
My mind and nervous system yesterday. But I actually did it. My brain stopped racing. It's got a propensity that we want to race like nobody's business, but
well, guess why it wants to race? Guess why it wants to race? It's got all that energy locked in your nervous system that when it's activated, starts to resonate throughout your nervous system, and it wants a way out. And the habit you've got is letting it come out through your mouth with your words.
Yes.
And if you just let yourself breathe, you can dissipate that energy. That's, you know, you're going into, when we do this, you're relaxing the vagus nerve and moving out of a sympathetic state we talked about yesterday, out of the fight, fright, flight, freeze, or fear. And you're moving into where you open your physiology so that it becomes an entryway for love to enter, an entryway for that trauma energy to be dissipated and let loose. No need to be in nervous conversation and filling the space with words, but you can just breathe and be alleviated of it.
Yeah.
That will augment the release that happens when you engage in the forgiveness process.
Okay.
So letting the energy out of tissue is an important part of the process.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. So how are you feeling?
I still want to finish that I never dealt with it. I went around life as nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
Except
my
parents found out and said, good, she deserved it.
Take a breath. So notice that tied in with this attack is the energy of parents attack. And maybe doing worksheets on both of those attacks would be a wise thing to do. And starting to let that energy be dissipated from your nervous system so that you can think about those things and be at peace and be connected and be a space where you're being, where love can show up in your physiology rather than being run by these trauma loops from the past.
It's like a never-ending trauma loop. It's got another
like a hamster wheel. Yep.
Then
you've adapted.
Me in a sanitarium.
Yeah, and you've adapted to this state of trauma as your norm.
Yes.
So now you're learning skills with which to open the trauma wheel, open the hamster wheel, let the hamster out, and take a breath and relax.
Oh, I like that.
Start to
that
let joy back into your body. Yeah, start to let joy back into your body.
Well, the joy just hit me just by you saying let the hamster out of the wheel because I am animal. I just want to care for every animal on the planet, so to see that animal free out of that cage.
Guess what the message of that is? You need to care for your animal. You need to care for your animal, your body.
Yes.
You need to care for it. You need to take care of it and nurture it and let the presence of love in, because that's what it's designed for.
Okay.
And now you're learning ways to remove this old energy from your nervous system. Say again?
This came up because, not that it's not come up before in my life, but it's come up before, and I was trying to get an understanding of why it came up this morning, and what I got clarity on, I got a huge amount of deeper clarity than I could have ever come up with myself with you this morning. But what I came up with that was clarity about it is that my whole history of my generation, the men beat the woman to the pulp. I mean, literally. Okay. And my grandmother.
Yeah. Bizarre, isn't it?
It happened to her. And so she was constantly in mental institutions because she had a broken neck and whatever, and she was hallucinating because she was a drug addict. And she would find men that would, my dad's father beat her up so bad that she couldn't even tell who she was. And he beat his second wife up the same way to a pulp. And my father let me know all this. And so I could see that it's the generational carbon-based memory that passed down. At least to me, it didn't happen to my brothers and sister.
Time to breathe and let it go. So you're acquiring skills to change your whole nervous system's approach to life. So nice work.
And I also bought into that this is the way life is, on a subconscious level, of course.
Not the way life is. That's the way your family system has been.
No, but and now to twist that and let that go, that it just came from what I believed, and I have to take responsibility for what I believed.
Yeah, well, it's in our genes. And here you are cleaning up your genes.
Yeah. So I guess I also want to say is that this breathing work is opening this up.
That's the idea.
Okay.
It's what we're here to do, young lady.
It was interesting. 2 or 3 days ago on a show, you said to breathe and unlock the muscles, and a lot of people don't want to do it because there's terror attached to it. And I'm thinking, I don't feel any terror at all, okay? I don't have terror, okay? I don't think the fear, I asked the fear, what is it that you're afraid of? And nothing came. And then when I started really getting into being committed to breathing, which I'm getting more committed to, this is what came up this morning, and I just thought, I didn't want this to come up. And Oh, well, I guess I'll deal with it. So the other thing I want to share, though, is Michelle didn't know this, my daughter, adult daughter. And I had to, I don't think I had to share it with her, but I did about a year ago because the therapy I was in, the therapy I was in was let it all hang out, you know. If you feel called to share it with her, share it with her. So I feel like, I don't know if I did any, what it did for her, I don't know. She talks about it on a rare basis. When she came out, I was sharing, she just came out last month. I just shared with her, and her husband was there, and she said, I said, a lot of men in my life, I've been in abusive relationships, but I, and she goes, oh, you mean my dad trying to murder you? And that's all she bring up. And I'm thinking, what did I do? How do I help her now? Should I have even said this?
Teach her the tools.
Okay.
You know, there's no rule, should I or shouldn't I have said what?
Okay.
If I'm creating a healing environment and the presence of love is there, speak anything that you're guided to speak. But speak it out of that connected space.
Yeah.
If the mouth is just shooting itself off because trauma is in there, then I can traumatize somebody else with it. When you move into the healing mode, there's a wonderful line in the Course in Miracles that says, when you are healed, you are never healed alone.
She understands that I have no hate for him. And I've come to the point with working with this stuff that it's you know, he had some issues and I had issues and we crashed.
So would you like some feedback?
Yes.
On taking your work to the next level?
Sure.
So my input would be that it's time to start doing worksheets on hatred of him.
Oh, my God. Okay, because I lied and said I don't hate him?
No. You spoke, you know, in our Laws of Living course, we teach about a thing we call regulatory speech. And when you watch your speech, you'll know what's going on in your own unconscious mind. You know, I use an example of, you know, Jeannie and I are getting ready to go to St. Louis to see our new grandbaby. Whoa, how cool is that? Now, if I were talking to Cecilia and telling you about that trip, I wouldn't say to you, by the way, Jeannie and I aren't going to China this weekend. If I said Jeannie and I aren't going to China this weekend, why would I say that? Because somewhere in brain cells is something about China this weekend. Otherwise, I'd have no earthly reason to even bring it into the conversation. We're going to St. Louis.
Yeah.
Why do I bring we're not going to China? Because somewhere in brain cells is firing something about a trip to China. So when I say I don't hate him, what I'm saying is I've got denial about my hatred. If there wasn't hatred connected with him, you wouldn't be talking about hate with him. I mean, do you talk about your daughter as though you don't hate your daughter? No. Why? Because there's no link. There's no connectedness with that. There is a connected with that. And so this is one of the other tools you want to have the brain cells to use is watch your speech. And when your speech, you know, you listen to Yeshua, and he says, here's how important speech is. The power of life and death is in your words.
Okay.
So when you watch your speech will tell you what's going on in your unconscious mind as you develop more and more of ability to open your unconscious, which is what you're doing now.
Okay.
That's the process you're engaging, is opening your unconscious. So I suggest a few worksheets around hate might be appropriate. You might find some pretty intense, pent-up hamster wheels in there based in rage and hatred. And there are the things that maybe something like a misbehaving dog might bring up.
Okay.
The purpose of life is to kick us right square in the limitation. Whatever we're holding on to, life is going to hone in and energetically show it to us. If we're paying attention to our words and to our thoughts, and we realize that there's something we're in denial about, but we're talking about it, then we use the tools to enter that part of the mind and clean it out.
Okay. I feel honored that I'm cleaning my garbage out.
Well, I'm honored to be here supporting you because you're opening a space. And, you know, it's a space in this world that I think with what's gone on in your family system and with women in general in our culture is hugely insane and really needs to be cleaned up, really needs healing from both sides, because there are men who, you know, well, that's just the way you do it. And it's like, you can't get any more bizarre for being called love to be abusive with another being than that one. And of course, then he goes back and he starts to uncover and opens his nervous system and finds out that he was abused. And there was an interesting scenario that unfolded before Jeannie and I, this goes back, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, we were traveling. We'd stopped at a store, a grocery type store, and we got up to the counter and there's a woman in front of us with a little boy about, I don't know, maybe two or a little less than two, or maybe three. And he's sitting in the cart and he wants some grapes. And the mother just goes into a fit. I had gone out to get the car. I pull up to the front of the store to pick Jeannie up. She was behind this woman. And the woman checked her groceries out, then pulled over to the side. Jeannie went out, was standing in front of the store waiting for me. And as the woman goes by with this little guy, his words she overhears to his mother are, "Mama, please don't beat me. I love you." You know, what business in the world does a child of 3 years have even knowing those words and speaking those words? Like, what, how bizarre is it that a child of 3 already knows he's going to con his mother by saying, "I love you," in order not to be beaten? And when he gets to be, you know, 6'6", 245, and there's a woman who resonates his mother file, what do you suppose is going to come out of his mouth and his fists?
Okay, I hear you.
You know, and it's just like time for us to clean this whole mess up.
Yes.
So joining you in it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Anything else on your mind for today?
No. I can take this a little bit at a time.
Yeah, breathe and take care of yourself. Now, you got the personal code evaluation link from Jeannie. Have you done that yet?
Yes, I did.
Oh, cool. Well, we'll have a look at it.
Morning. Huh?
You got the link, but you haven't done the code the evaluation yet?
No, I just read it this morning, and did see the correction, the revision of she said don't watch the video. First she said watch videos first. Yeah, okay.
Right.
So I'll do the
first. Yeah, you want the questions. Yeah, you want to answer the questions as honestly as possible. If you watch the video ahead, I've seen people who play what I call smart rat. Oh, I know what answer they want here, so I'll give the right answer so my scores look good. But the idea isn't to get your scores looking good. The idea is to get accurate information so you know what your work is. I remember one guy we had at Heartland. This goes back, 30 years ago. It was a guy at Heartland. He was on the support team. And there were two women that were there, and he was pretty abusive with them, you know, based on our conversation we've just been doing. But he would do the evaluation, and he'd get 100 on everything right across the board. But his behavior belied the truth, you know, told us the truth about what was going on. And finally, that summer, I came up with a way to get accurate scores on him. And that was, I had him sit with these two women, and they answered the questions for him. Then we got some accurate scores and could show him where his work was. But if you play smart rat, you're just defeating yourself. So you want the answers to be as honest as possible. Read the instructions really carefully, as honest as possible. And what that will do is it will break down your personal code. And the personal code is the personal set of rules that each mind has for, you know, determining its behaviors. It'll break down your personal code. It'll show you where your greatest gains will be, and then the video that you'll follow up with will give you specific exercises to do for each of the areas that you're challenged in.
You know, Michael, while you were just describing that, I've never breathed so deep and slow and like, I can't remember. All of a sudden, it just came in without me trying to, like, come on, come on, come on, and please come in.
So you know what you just did with that little exercise we just did? You can do this regularly. The vagus nerve is the largest nerve in the body. It starts in your brain, goes down, and touches every organ in your body throughout your whole system. It's been referred to as the tree of life. You just opened the tree of life.
Oh my God! You know, I'm just going to bring it up that the last year I've been studying the Essenes, which I'm really not much interested in now anymore. But I always wanted to put a picture of their tree of life up, and I couldn't find one. But you know, I know we are the tree of life, aren't we?
Yep. It's the vagus nerve. That's it.
Oh, I see. Thank you so much. Because
and you just opened it physically.
Thank you so much.
And with the breath.
Yes. I've never had it come in that naturally that I can ever remember in my life. And deeply.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you open up.
Okay.
So nice work.
I will. So is this something the PC, P what, personal code, C, E?
Personal code evaluation, PCE.
Yes. Is that something that I need to do in 30 minutes and then not take, like, more longer than that?
No, you can take – you've got up to 2 hours. It usually takes people 30 or 40 minutes. It's not that long a process.
I'll book out a time for that.
Yeah. The only thing – and the reason why I say that it takes about that long is that once you start it, please follow through to completion. You don't want to start it and then go, well, I'm going to go have lunch and come back. Because if it goes past 2 hours, the whole thing has to reset, and it's hell for Jeannie. Oh. And we want to support Jeannie staying in heaven.
I shall do that. I will be a space for Jeannie's just keeping the peace.
There you go.
Okay.
So are you okay with that, Jeannie, if we support you just keep staying in heaven?
Absolutely.
All right. I will be talking soon. I will be breathing.
Okay, young lady.
I will be breathing through. And all right. See ya.
All right. I actually just texted you a picture.
Oh, you did. I don't know how to do it while you're on the phone with me, though.
Well, that's okay.
I'm afraid
you'll get it.
Okay.
All right. Blessings.
Thank you.
That's it. You'll be looking at the tree of life that you just opened in yourself when you take a look at it.
Oh, my God, thank you so much.
All right. And you can reinforce that with visualization as well. So.
Bye.
Sweet. All right, young lady, well, any other thoughts before we call it a day on this conversation?
Well, you did say I can use the tree of life to visualize specifically what? That I'm a tree of life?
As you're doing this exercise, get this, what it looks like, where the energy's going and what you're opening up. This controls the flow through the whole structure into every organ, connected to every organ in the so-called body. You get that as a picture in your brain, and then when you're doing that exercise and you're breathing and doing worksheets, picture that. Okay, so this whole thing is opening, and every hamster wheel from the past is just being, the rats are being let out in mass. All right, young lady, you have a blessed one.
Okay,
take care. All right,
bye.
Blessings, bye-bye. Well, Miss Jeannie, I am going to send you an email with links to those two pictures so that if you choose, you can put them in the notes.
That works.
So, sweetie? Okay.
Nobody has a hand up, and there's no questions in the chat room. I would just also like to add, you've pointed out her regulatory speech on not hating him, but also she repeated about 3 or 4 times that she wasn't afraid. She didn't have terror.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of times, you know, we have said that anger is the cover for the fear. And so also looking at the terror that is below that anger.
Yep.
Would be a
excellent
plus.
Absolutely. I'm with that 2,000%. Right on.
Now, since we don't have a hand up, as a person that has also gone through physical abuse, I can also say that, you know, when we're in that terror state, then we feel helpless and weak. And so flipping over into the anger is more of a, it's also a protective mechanism, I think.
Right.
For self, for survival. We have 8 minutes. We have time for another question. Somebody presses 1. We have some new numbers on the switchboard today that I don't recognize, and then we've got some that are our usual listeners and some from a long time ago that are now back. So that's awesome. So if you have any questions or if we can support you in any way, press 1. Put a hand up. Turn on your microphone. We'd love to hear from you.
So again, our calling number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, 563-999-3581. We'd love to have a conversation with you. And we've got about 7 minutes or so. So instead of waiting till the last second, I mean, we've covered quite a bit of territory today. You know, if I'd been on your local platform in your local, you know, library or college or high school or church or prison having this conversation, I finished the conversation and walked down off the platform into the audience, what would you come over and ask me? And I'm glad you put your hand up, so let's say hello.
417, I believe this is Miss Judy.
You're right. Hello, Jeannie and Michael.
Hey there, young lady.
Welcome. I have a question. My grandson went through some horrific abuse by his stepfather as a young child, and he's now 12 years old. And mom was taking him to the psychologist, but she quit taking him because she said all they talked about was Pokemon. And I've been trying to get her to let him come and stay with me a little while so I can give him some of these tools if he so chooses, you know, to use them. And she's kind of negating everything that I offer, you know. And I was sitting here listening to the sister that called earlier about her abuse coming from, you know, and it being in her genetic line. And my daughter's working on hers best that she can too. However, I want to know what kind of worksheets can I do for my great-grandson?
Well, one thing you can do is you could imagine being your great-grandson and asking his permission to do some work with him. And remember, you know, these higher faculties are available. We don't need to be in somebody's physical presence.
Right.
And you can perhaps help him start to process some of that energy.
Yeah. He has a lot of meltdown.
Yeah. So maybe take the details of one of his meltdowns and you do a worksheet on that meltdown as though you were him having the meltdown.
Okay. All right.
And
I can do that.
See what comes up. You may find yourself getting a lot of insight from him and helping to open a space for the energy to shift.
Okay.
And she's just in refusal. You know, she's not going to let him go anywhere else.
She's got a mind of her own, and it mom makes her mad, she kicks mom out. And you're not going to believe this, but her little girl is 4 years old, and grandma come over the other week and was trying to help her out with something, and she just put in a little bit too much information, and her daughter started getting angry, and the little 4-year-old girl said, "You made my mama mad. You need to go home."
Yeah. Well, it's a belief of the culture that everybody else is the problem, and until we wake up from that, you know, it's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, that little girl wouldn't let up on her either. She finally had to go. But, you know, that's the way it goes in that family. So, my family. And so I will do that with the worksheets, Michael. Thank you and Jeannie for all you do here.
Yeah. And, you know,
appreciate,
I mean, will she let you go to lunch with him? Will she let you take him to lunch?
No. I could take all of them out to lunch, but not him. I even offered to take him on the train ride down in Branson, you know, and she wouldn't go for it. She just, I don't know what her deal is. It's, you know, I raised him for a little while when mom was on drugs, so it was really hard on the girls being separated from their mom and no father. And so I raised him for a couple of years, and by that time, mom got herself straightened out, and they got to go back and live with her. And they just, I don't know, I think when they see me coming, it's like, is she going to take me home with her? You know, do the best we can. I hold that space of love for them, and they're in my prayers all the time. And it's, but I am available for them. That's the important thing.
Yeah, that is important. And is there any unresolved resentment that might block communication with her that you might personally do some work on to open a different space for communication with her?
She just ignores me. There's no communication at all. Sometimes I'll call her up and I'll offer something, and she'll say, "Well, I'm busy next month," so she can't for a whole 4 weeks. She can't make time to do this or that with me.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think that she's just being overprotective, maybe of her son. I don't know. Can't figure that out. But I'll just work on those worksheets, and we'll go from there.
Well, we'll hold the space.
All righty. You guys have a really safe trip and enjoy it, okay?
We will. All right.
Beautiful
blessings.
Weather. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye. Blessings. Well, Miss Jeannie, we're down to the last few seconds, so I'm going to just say thank you, everybody, for joining us, and create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. We appreciate you. Blessings. Bye-bye.
I choose to live more consciously, evolving continuously.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.